So, before we get started in a conversation we're going to have about housing in Delaware, I wanted to make a little announcement because I think it's neat. I used to know somebody who used to say, all of our struggles are connected. Now, I don't think this person believes that anymore for different reasons, but I still do. And there is a wonderful housing activist called Kim Eppenheimer at Friendship House, who I've been working with even on police reform. I was introduced through a couple of friends, Michael Kalmbach, and she applied for and was named to the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board. So I went to the first meeting to, like, support the people who I knew that were going to be on the board, and now Kim is the chair of that board. So it's just funny how housing and that kind of community stuff sort of is getting its tentacles over here, because it's all connected. And I was very happy for Kim, I have to say. I think she's going to do great, and I'm happy that there's somebody who's going to be directing it, because it's going to be tricky. There really are no rules. You know, it's going to be difficult for that committee to do anything sort of productive, but there was a lot of people interested in the first meeting, and I'm very, very happy for my friend Kim, who will be sort of helping direct that work. So housing and everything else, it's all connected. In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. This is Rob. This is your Highlands Bunker podcast. We're here in the studio, as we normally are. Carl's behind the table, as he normally is. And our guest tonight is Rachel Stucker. She is the executive director of Housing Alliance Delaware, and I wanted to introduce her and say thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Everybody knows kind of I'm sort of a housing is one of the linchpins, I think, in the whole project, the progressive leftist project, sort of those things that are systemic that people like to blame on individual people, which is a little weird. But before we get into all that, what's your background? How'd you get into this type of advocacy work?
Sure. Yeah. Let's see, my background. I'm a Delawarean. Born and raised in Bear before it was current day Bear, when there were still some farm fields there.
Rural Bear.
Rural Bear. Right? 1980s and 90s Bear. I don't know, pretty standard, like what you would think of upbringing of a like middle class white person in suburban Delaware. Married, supportive parents, went to college. Had my mind opened to the injustice of the world and decided to do some things in service to help. So I did a 2 years in the Peace Corps in the Eastern Caribbean, which I wasn't thinking about housing in this way at that time, but housing obviously was a really big deal there. I actually, when I was a Peace Corps volunteer, was living in public housing, which was the best housing that they had.
What island?
St. Vincent.
St. Vincent.
Let me actually clarify. Not the best housing. Obviously, if you had a lot of money and you...
If you lived in a villa.
Right.
If you lived in a home that was called like a villa, then it was good. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
But I lived in this really nice, fresh, new public housing unit. I don't know how or why. It was lovely. And it was all these really like little, cute, multicolored housing units in this valley right next to places where people were living in shanties that they had made from, you know, scrap metal. So I was there for a couple of years, came back, did AmeriCorps for a couple of years through Public Allies Delaware. I am a Public Allies AmeriCorps alum. And then primarily doing youth community development stuff. And then there was an opportunity to go work in direct services with homeless adults in Elkton, Maryland. And I, you know, was young and adventurous and didn't know much about homelessness in any real meaningful way and decided that that would be a thing I would do. And it was really just appalling, what was happening, you know, 10 miles from where I grew up.
Yeah. What did you learn? What did you learn?
Yeah.
About
yeah.
Since so, you kind of went into it sort of like,
yeah.
This is a problem. I'm going to go help.
Right.
And, because you phrased it that way. It was very interesting. Like hadn't learned anything. So yeah. What
yeah,
did you learn?
Yeah. I mean, I learned that The condition, the experience of being homeless is more problematic than people who haven't experienced it can even begin to imagine in terms of a person's health and well-being on a day-to-day basis, their ability to think clearly without sleep. I was dealing with unsheltered homeless adults who'd been homeless, sleeping in encampments for long periods of time. We were always dealing with health emergencies, taking people to the emergency room for spider bites and infections and abscess teeth. I mean, you name it. And that no matter how hard we tried, I worked there for almost 3 years and I loved it, but no matter how hard I would try at the client level to help somebody, there was always something at the system level that was like blocking my ability to get that person help. Like I would be working, I remember working with a gentleman for, it took me almost 2 years to get someone an ID. As soon as he did, of course, he was able to get housing. I spent about a year, finally got a young gentleman that we were serving willing to go to treatment. And of course, that was the day. And the health department was literally a block away. We would just walk. He was ready to go. Of course, that's the day they didn't have a bed available. And so it really, I could tell a million other stories, but it seemed like all the things that we were trying to do with people and to help people, there were very rarely good outcomes. And it was always due to a lack of resources, something prohibiting someone from getting the help they needed, whether it was a document or there were so many things working against people. And that made me want to do policy and advocacy work around homelessness. I felt, number one, already a little burnout after a couple of years because it's hard to see people that you work with every day die and get hit by cars in the middle of the night on Route 40. That's a hard thing. So it's hard work, and I decided I wanted to address it at the system level.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be sort of my next question is, like, you're trying to intervene on the person and get the person sort of a safe place to go in whatever manner you can. But there's a step back from that that actually I think is the thing that puts the obstacles in place. Like, why are these people out there rough sleeping, sleeping in camps, sleeping in their car, couch surfing, or just completely just on the street? Like, why is that? and then how does that impact, like, your ability to go and find a bed for somebody or get them an ID or whatever? You know, it's meant to be difficult because it really isn't an individualized problem. It's a systemic social problem that nobody sort of wants to define in that way, I feel like.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's a systemic social problem that doesn't have that isn't being responded to with a systemic social solution. It's being responded to at the individual client level. And those things are really, really important. I just want to be like,
oh, yes.
Like, it is so important.
Caveat, this is incredibly, these interventions, the kind that mm-hmm. Kim does, the kind that Rachel does, yep. Her work, the kind of Michael Kalmbach does, mm-hmm. are all extremely important. Mm-hmm. But that is a, you know, that's in the emergency room trying to sew somebody back together.
Yep.
We want to be out sort of addressing things that are a little bit uneasy that people don't want to. That kind of want to ignore,
yeah.
Like what the real driver is to put us in this situation. Mm-hmm.
Something I used to say a lot was that people who are doing homeless services should be in a formal way, should be in the business of trying to put themselves out of business, or if they are right, that we shouldn't have to be doing this. This shouldn't be a problem that we need to respond to. A lot of times, organizations and people that are doing that work don't have the capacity. It's survival mode. Like a lot of staff, a lot of organizations have very few resources to meet these crisis needs. And I think that's why having strong housing advocacy organizations, building a coalition of strong housing advocacy organizations in Delaware is so important, because we want to be in the business of trying to put them out of business. Not in a mean way, in a good way, right? We want there not to be homeless folks that need that crisis help. We want people to be stably housed. We want to do that kind of bigger systems level work as much as we can.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to get your thought on a specific issue because I think it goes to a systemic process, not really an individual choice. Is the issue in Sussex? It's gotten some legacy media coverage, which at least is good. But you know, we have a huge resort down the eastern seaboard in Delaware. But you know, the people who are the hostess or the host or the maitre d' at the restaurant, the server at the restaurant, the person running the working at these businesses to keep those resorts going can't live there. And so they're either, you know, they're driving further, which is putting stress on, you know, a low-wage worker just having to drive further or get transportation further is just ruining their life. It's ruining their family life probably. And it all just comes down to affordability. You know, somebody who is a low-wage worker can't live in a resort. There's nowhere to go. And it's you know, Sussex is not for lack of development. You know, I see a lot of buildings going up. A lot of those buildings are housing, but yet the issue persists. And so, yeah, I mean, it's sort of these kind of issues that I'm most sort of interested in unpacking or just getting sort of light shined on them, because I think they're the most important ones.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. And there's a lot of development happening in Wilmington. There's a lot of high-end housing development happening in a lot of places in Delaware, and not nearly enough of the type of housing that people actually need to be able to live and work in the community. I think I said this recently. I'll say it again. If producing affordable housing was profitable, right? Housing sits it's a private market good. It is a capitalism. It is a good that is purchased. It's not thought of as something that people... It's not provided to people like a need, like food is through food stamps. It's a good. If it were profitable to build affordable housing, people would be doing it, even if it was extremely difficult to do. But it is both difficult and not profitable. And so that's where the government's intervention is needed to make sure that it happens at all levels of government.
I agree with everything you just said. Yeah, as you can probably guess, you know, the idea that shelter becomes like a commodity,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, and people buy. I mean, and this is seen in resort towns, like we said, but also in cities too, even, you know, tiny Wilmington up to, you know, New York or London, where people buy fancy flats to go, you know, and vacation homes elsewhere, and it just pushes people out to the margins everywhere. And so, you know, somebody who, you know, maybe is working and can get a place will have insufficient housing or inferior housing. The people who can't even do that, you know, are seeing you or on the street. And yeah, it's a choice. You know, it doesn't have to be a commodity. We choose to do it this way. Capitalism doesn't occur naturally in nature. It doesn't mm-hmm. spring out of the jungle or anything. We actually we created it. We wrote all the rules to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, oh, if we change it, it's like some kind of like there'll be this natural disaster.
The natural order will be disturbed.
That's not how it's right. not how it works, you know. There are things that need to be done that you potentially might not be able to, you know, show on a spreadsheet that this number went up. But you're actually going to be better off, and I think, you know, many places in the Pacific Rim, like Japan, have sort of figured this out. Places in Northern Europe have figured it out. You actually do better when there's a more healthy sort of situation around you, and you don't have people desperate on the street. Basically,
right.
It's not a good way to be. But yeah, I wonder. When you get into this conversation, which I guess you get into on a regular basis, and you tell people that, I'm sure they don't like it. Because we got a big capitalist sort of state. I don't know if you noticed, but
I did.
There's a bunch
yeah.
of big banks in the state and corporate
yep.
like corporate code
mm-hmm.
and fancy people and all that. And so I'm sure you've noticed that they're probably not really like they don't like the expert sort of diagnosis, which I think is obviously correct. They probably don't like that diagnosis.
So I'll actually say I think people agree with the diagnosis. I think it's the solution that people disagree with. Meaning, and maybe that's more what you meant, but I think the diagnosis that there is a problem, that the problem is a result of market forces that the housing market is a market-driven sector, just like pretty much everything, and that market is not meeting the needs of our citizens. I think people get and accept that. It's the what do we do about it part where there's a lot of differing in opinions or just different visions about what's possible, right? I think that's a big part of it, is that there's a lot of limited thinking around what's possible.
Yes, I've always thought that, you know, it is limited thinking, but it's limited for a reason. Like, it's not creative thinking because nobody wants to just come out and say that Buccini Pollen Group should build literally a 500, you know, apartment building and would just put people in it for free.
Right. Yeah.
That's it. That's not the answer. Uh-huh. But nobody wants to hear that. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we can. Yeah, you're not going to be able to make as much money for your stockholders or put in another pool at your, you know, Westchester estate. You just can't. We have a serious social problem that you're actually, if you accept the diagnosis, you're actually complicit in. You're the cigarette. It's the cancer. You're the cigarette. Like, you've commodified housing. Let's be honest, and I'm not going to say any more names because I can see you getting a little bit uncomfortable. But let's be honest, we won't say any more names. Maybe we'll beep that name out.
I think it's fair. I just don't think it's fair to say that it was created by a particular person.
Oh, no, it's correct.
That's what I was making that face at.
That's fair. Yeah, it's not a particular person. It's people of that ilk. You know, it's probably about 15 people or whatever. Like, no, uh-huh. Yeah, I'm using that as an example.
As
but certainly any big... any big regional developer like that is their fault. Like,
yeah,
their
goal is profit.
Correct. And so they're never going to, they're paid very health. Mm-hmm. They're paid a lot to not be creative.
Correct. That's correct.
So we just got to. I feel like that just needs to be called out, and not on an individual person, but on a system that is created, as you said, to generate a market for housing.
Right. And then it's the role, and I think this is where, you know, money and politics is, you know, we can go down that rabbit hole, but this is where we need public officials, local elected officials, people in positions of power in the government to be willing to require those people to do certain things. Yes. And have the ability to enforce those things. We have a very strong private sector. We have a very... When it comes to housing and housing regulation, we have a very strong private sector and a very weak public sector generally.
Yeah, well, that's by design. Again, of course. I mean, this is the healthcare is the same. It's the same. These systems are like, you know, they set them up this way and then tell you, oh, look at that. It's failing. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, the VA, uh-huh. It's failing. Mm-hmm. The VA is actually halfway decent, but but those are like, oh, look, it doesn't work. Yeah, you made it not work. Like, mm-hmm. You're the one that made it. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't, it's not
that's
naturally
so,
not working.
That's so funny that it's just very, yes. So we see this all the time. You can do this at the societal level with different systems and the VA, you know, just because you said that one.
Yeah.
As an example. But even at the program level, we underinvest in things. We say, okay, we're going to try this new thing. We're going to try it out and see if it works. You know, it worked in this other community. It worked in that other community. We're going to try it here, but we underinvest in it. We don't make sure that we are like fully prepared to implement it. And then we say it didn't work. And so therefore it must not work. So we stop investing in it. That happens a lot, I feel like, in our state.
Yeah. yes.
And
because
we don't. Yeah. I mean, at the larger level as well. But I do think there needs to be some real like bold action where there's a willingness to truly invest and take risk in a solution, even when people are saying, oh, I don't think that's going to work, or oh, that'll never work here. And we've seen some of that the last couple of years, which is exciting.
We have seen some. I give it credit because it deserves credit. I think the Hope Center was an incredible idea. Mm-hmm. I think there should be, you know, five of them in each county.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And all the services should be there, and we should just be pouring money into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And throughout
COVID, all the nonprofit, and even as recently as not through, you know, recently, you know, all the nonprofit partners that do this work that are trying to help homeless people every day and families in Kent and Sussex counties have been, where can we find one? How do we get a Hope Center?
Yeah.
How do we make this happen?
And let's not forget, this was a product of COVID, but even more broadly, you know, money was just paid out from the government during COVID.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tons of money.
Yeah.
And it slashed child poverty like in half.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's right back where it was before because we stopped giving them money.
Yeah.
Now
yep.
People say, well, what about inflation? Well, I'll have you know, you should look into the price gouging and the corporate profits that happened over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tell me what you think about that inflation argument, because I think it's fake.
I think you are mostly correct.
Thank you.
You're
she
welcome.
Has she has to say that, or else Carl will AI her voice and saying crazy stuff about Rob Buccini. okay, so I do want to talk a little bit about the Homeless Bill of Rights. Number one, because I don't know enough about it. I'm ashamed to say. Number two, this will probably come as no surprise to you. The reason I had heard that working families and other people were doing a lot of work on it. Sophie Phillips, the rep from Christiana area, introduced it. And then I just happened to be at the pub in the afternoon, and my wife is laughing. She's like, "Look at this guy," and the guy down on the corner who owns a boutique real estate company, like a young guy, was like doing a TikTok video about how the Homeless Bill of Rights is going to have, we're going to be having encampments in Trolley. We're going to total fear mongering. The guy's a complete scumbag. He's like, "I'm a business owner." He's got, you know, maybe you shouldn't have a hoodie and a backwards baseball cap then. You look like a fucking respectable part of the society. But it was really, joking aside, and I'm not even really being too hyperbolic about this, it was a disgusting video. I was disgusted that I share a neighborhood with this person. Because it was just like, you know, these are non-humans, and we're not going to be able to get our bulldozer and bulldozer them out. Which, again, number one is not what the bill does, which mm-hmm, I know you're going mm-hmm. to give me the number two. But number two, even to have that inclination, like to fearmonger people and be like, "Oh, there's going to be encampments. You're not going to be able to do anything." Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, even to have that idea that that's what you're going to go on social media and do, I think is absolutely a disgrace. Mm-hmm. But can you talk a little bit about what the bill will actually do and sort of how it's designed?
Yeah. So I will talk about the bill and how it's actually designed. I think it makes sense that there are people that are scared that there will be encampments everywhere and we won't know what to do about them. I don't think it's based in reality, but I understand why some people have that fear. Homelessness has been such a, it's being used by politicians and by the media as like a wedge issue. And so I think people have a lot of unfounded fear, but in some ways I understand why. But you are correct. That's not what this bill is about. So when folks are experiencing homelessness or don't have a fixed address, so let's say I'm in Wilmington, I sleep in my car, I go to I use the Friendship House, since we were talking about Friendship House earlier, drop-in center, as my mailing address. Have been doing that for the last 6 months. I finally have a job. I think I might be able to, you know, maybe I'm getting some rental assistance for first month's rent from somewhere, and I'm applying to apartments to see if I can get in. It makes it so that the potential landlord or property owner can't look and see, oh, your mailing address is a homeless shelter, or your mailing address is a service site where homeless folks go. That means you're homeless, and I don't want to lease to someone who's homeless because there must be something wrong with you or something bad about you or something deficient about you. So it's to prevent discrimination and access to housing and also employment based on someone's housing status, that you do not have stable and permanent housing. There is some language in the bill related to public space, but it's all very, very tightly regulated. it would in no way allow for no one to be able to do anything at all about someone sleeping outside of their business on the sidewalk. I was in DC over the weekend, and on Monday was outside of the Supreme Court. I don't know if you're familiar with the Supreme Court's case on Monday, the first in many, many years related to homelessness and the criminalization of people sleeping outside. But I'd be happy to talk about that as well.
Please, please. Well, the first thing I want to say is the just to address the idea of, you know, the reason people have this fear. I think the reason they have it is because if they travel or they walk around this city or go anywhere, really, and they see it, they're very uncomfortable because we did it. And so they don't like to look at it. And that's kind of tough shit, number one. Number two, you can look at, you know, there's many, many academic sort of research studies about this. There's nothing. Homeless people do not do more crime. They're just as violent or nonviolent as anybody else can be. They're in a very stressful situation. So, you know, obviously there's going to be interactions with the public that aren't going to be great. But let's be honest with ourselves about what it really is. It's that's, again, folks, I hate to say it, it's fake. They're just regular people, just like us. So I did want to say that about the mentality because, yeah, I guess, you know, I wouldn't like it if there was an encampment in right. Rockford Park either. Right. I live here, but I understand that says something about me.
Right. Something about society.
Something about us. About we failed. Yeah. We're failing. That's it's a stark reminder of our failure.
Correct. That's right. Yeah. Delaware currently has on the books what are currently unconstitutional laws related to the ability for police and public safety officers to criminalize people who are loitering or panhandling. And has refused to do anything to correct those laws for years. The case in front of the Supreme Court currently, there's a town in Oregon called Grants Pass, and I was actually standing in line for a couple hours with two women from Grants Pass. They were going into the Supreme Court.
They had oral arguments this week?
Yeah, they had oral arguments on Monday. Okay. And so it's a town that has no shelter for homeless folks, no affordable housing. And so for the last couple of years, there have been encampments popping up everywhere. And the town implemented a three strikes you're out policy. So you get a fine, then you get a second fine, and then you get arrested. And the fines increase for literally sleeping outside. So folks have nowhere else to go, and they are civilly and criminally charged for having nowhere else to go and for the act of sleeping, which is a human necessity. So it's very concerning. I'm really waiting to see what the Supreme Court will do with this case, but it's really just terrifying.
What was the lower court's decision?
So the lower court's decision was to, now you're going to get me not using the right.
Oh, okay.
Words.
We can look this up.
Yeah.
did the lower court, side with the city?
Yes.
So it's constitutional that they can arrest somebody for sleeping on the street.
Yeah, when there's nowhere else to go.
So that's the lower court. So they would just have to uphold the lower court's decision
or reverse the lower court. True.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
No, I know. I think some people would hear that in our society and go, "Oh, that makes sense. You know, we can't have people sleeping where, you know. Where are folks supposed to go? There's nowhere to go. And even when there is somewhere to go, a lot of times those places might not be safe. People might not be allowed to go back because of some type of incident. A person who is struggling with anxiety and paranoia is not going to want to go to a shelter that has cots everywhere that's full of people. I mean, the idea that we would hold anyone criminally or civilly liable for having nowhere safe to sleep at night is just, it's horrifying. It's just, and we do that. We do that sometimes in our community as well, when we force people to move, when we sweep encampments. So for the last couple of years, for example, here in Delaware, before the point in time count in January, which we do every year, in the last 2 years, I don't know about before that, Southern Delaware in particular has done large encampment sweeps the 2 to 3 weeks prior to our annual point in time count. Maybe that's a coincidence. I don't know. Maybe.
I got to tell you, Rachel, I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it. Carl's not buying it either. Goddamn Sussex County. No, I'm not. I'm not surprised by any of this. You know, we kind of follow. We're friends with Professor Steve Matro at the University of Delaware, and sort of follow some of that stuff that he does on the academic side. So I know it's that whole process is fraught with all kinds of things. But the only thing I'll say, just to point this out, which you know should be patently clear, is, you know, we're equipped. The system has already designed. So we have cops. We have jails. You know, we can just treat people like subhuman and just roll them up because we're equipped to do that already. We have that thing. But so that's the only thing that we have. Like, we just have to arrest people. What else would we do? And so, you know, that's another sort of one of the reasons, I think, as I started the show with, one of the reasons that sort of police reform and public safety and these housing issues sort of obviously intersect.
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm.
Because that's what the mechanism the state is going to use to address this problem is going to be violent, and it's going to be expensive, and it's going to create tons of more problems. So I you know, it's pretty clear where that intersection is. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think for it again, it requires the ability to envision something different, and the willingness to invest the resources in creating, well, preventing it from getting worse, preventing it from happening at all, but then also creating a new and different way to respond to the problem, creating a new system. And we're not good at that. It's hard.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of it is sort of like, and there's nothing we can do about it. As you said before, I mean, there's acute issues that need to be addressed for people, and if that's the best we can do right now, we have to do that. But yeah, I mean, there's, and maybe this is a good time to get into the last sort of big topic. One of the reasons I wanted to talk is because there's going to be a big sort of lobbying day for all sorts of housing issues in Dover at Legg Hall in May. Mm-hmm. What's the exact date?
Yes, May 9th.
May 9th, all day. So there'll be different, I assume you can register, there'll be a lunch, there'll be different programs you can go to, all that kind of stuff. Is that?
So yeah, so the goal of so we'll have a tent on Legislative Mall outside of Legislative Hall. You go to our website to register, housingalliancede.org. Anyone who registers in advance, we're going to be reaching out to you to try to help you set up appointments with your state legislators that day while you're there. And the goal is to get as many people down and into Legislative Hall as possible to talk about specific legislation that people are considering, but also just to make it clear that, like other parts of this country, housing is a major problem that needs real solutions, and that we expect our elected officials to be investing in those solutions. In the tent, so if you pre-register, you get a ticket for lunch from or breakfast, actually, depending on the time of your appointments. We're there from 9 to 5 all day. But you get a ticket for food from a food truck. We don't really have a program because everyone's appointments are at different times, but there will be a lot of networking opportunities. We have a lot of sponsors this year who will have tables and be there to talk to folks. We will have some folks with lived experience of homelessness there, who are also artists coming to share and sell some art under our tent. So folks can come and go as they need to throughout the day based on their appointment times. And we're hoping to get registration up over 125 this year.
Oh, cool. So you're managing it out of the green.
Correct.
Got the food truck out there, and then people can get their stuff and go in and do it.
Correct.
What they need
to do. Everyone will come. They'll get information about, you know, some talking points and what the legislative priorities are. We have free transportation if folks need it. They can contact Sonia Starr through our organization. Information about how to do that, again, is on our website. But we have some free transportation lined up from all three counties. We need folks to pre-register for that so that we can figure out pickup spots and everything. But we really wanted to make that transportation available for folks too this year.
So this is my question.
Yeah.
Involved with that, because I'm doing sort of some reform work, police reform work for the Office of Defense Services. And one of the things that I'm sort of mulling over in my mind is how productive it is to spend time in Dover. And I say that because, and I'm probably not saying anything you don't know, I'm not going to get you in trouble, I promise. But I find that a lot of these elected officials are a little bit squirrely. You know, they would love to listen to you. They might even come out, take a picture, but they're not nice. They're tricksters, and hucksters. And I wonder whether, because I've gone to different like lobbying days for the ACLU and for other things, and I wonder. I mean, this is probably what. That's not your first one, I'm sure. I wonder how productive they are. I wonder if you feel like and I'm not talking about, because I'm going to have another question in a minute, about the organizing of the people there, but how much you get out of the meetings with the legislators or any interaction with the legislation at all, or legislators at all. Because
yeah,
I think it's important
yeah.
that people gather and they know mm-hmm. people are mm-hmm. together. That's the important part. Mm-hmm. I think the legislators... ignore them until you get about 1,000 people that you can go storm that place. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I don't think I agree, though. I think that we have to sit and we have to have conversations with people who are in decision-making positions. And I think you're right that sometimes those conversations do not always result in the outcome that we want, for sure. We've been talking, for example, about increasing sustainable ongoing funding for affordable housing in Delaware for many, many years. We have lots of legislators who are interested and supportive, but nothing has happened yet, right?
Nothing has happened yet. Okay.
Right. So I'm not, so I hear you.
I see you.
I hear you.
We're in this space. I recognize your space.
But I do think it's important to do. Because you need to go be in their space and talk to them. People need to see real people talking to them about the issue in order to feel that there's some political pressure. There is a place, there is very much a place for a different type of action in the community, which I think is what you're talking about, where there's a rally of some sort or a, right, some larger gathering of people that may be more aggressive in their tactics, but that is
I would say this, aggressive. I get in trouble for saying aggressive.
Assertive,
I get in trouble.
Assertive.
Adversarial.
Adversarial, yes. That's a perfect word.
Adversarial. That's
yes.
my new buzzword.
That's perfect, yes.
Because I think we do too much.
Because I don't think storming the Capitol is a good thing. It's something that we want to.
Do you want to come? We have the board game Storm the Capitol. We're going to play.
Oh,
do you want to come and play with us?
Oh, my gosh.
We're going to try to overthrow the government and get out
to
the helicopter.
Yeah, see, I can't support overthrowing the government, but I do think there's a place for more.
I mean, this government kind of stinks. So, I mean, I wasn't on the board. I wasn't on board with the direction they wanted to take it, but I was on board with the tactic pretty much.
I do think that there is a place for more adversarial tactics than what Day for Housing is. But I do think that Day for Housing is important. I do think it's important to sit and talk with folks. The more people, we've seen more legislators, and again, it's going much slower than we would want it to. The type of progress that we need in a crisis that like the one we have is not happening. but we have seen more people, more legislators who have the ability to do things, thinking about housing, talking about housing, wanting to learn about housing than we ever have before. And yeah, it's slow. And I'm not going to say that it's always, it always gives me joy and hope, but I think it's important to do.
Yeah. And I'm sort of thinking these issues through, and I'll just say this. It's not that I don't think it's important. I actually think we prioritize it too high. That's kind of where I'm sort of landing as I'm going through this. I mentioned on a different unrelated call to a group of sort of policy advocates in the ecosystem, as we say. I don't really like that word, but it's the only other word I can think of. And I mentioned it to them. I think that, and you mentioned it earlier, coming from sort of a suburban, white, middle-class background. I'm similar. I think we might even be the same age, the way you mentioned the 80s and 90s. I think we're probably about the same age. We people like us sort of like think it's cool because we go into Leg Hall and we know the people. We can tell them, hey, to see our report. And I'm so glad you're supporting Sophie Phillips's bill, like, because that's the stuff like professional white people want to do. And I think that they like give their 2 minutes commentary. You go to the committee meeting and you say your 2 minutes, and you're like, oh, I did it. I'm on the video. I think we're doing that too much. And it's not that I think it's not important. In fact, I think we should take that opportunity to be a little more pointed in the way that we're making our arguments, and the pressure that we're putting people under. So I do think that it's an important thing. I think we prioritize it too high, and we're doing it wrong. That's what I think. Because as you said, that's where the change is going to happen. We have to interact with that in
right.
some fashion.
We have to have influence in that space.
We have to
yes.
get into that space in some fashion. But how do we want to do it? You know, what's the most productive way? If we look back on, and like you said, you've been doing this a long time. I've been following it a long time, but only been doing it maybe a short period of time, a lot shorter than others. But my argument is that I don't know, like, I think we get too excited about small gains, and we don't see enough result. We're like, oh, this person's going to talk to me that didn't talk to me last year. That's not good enough.
I agree. 100%. I agree. That's not good
I'm not
enough.
Trying to talk you into anything.
I will tell you very clearly where I disagree, but with that, I definitely agree. It's not enough. I mean, that's the problem. It's not enough. We've had exciting housing legislation be introduced the last couple of years and almost none of it has passed. Right. So, yay, people are talking about it. Yay, people want to do something about it. It's not passing. I mean, obviously, right to representation passed. That's great. There are ways that legislation should have and could have been much stronger than it ended up being.
You're talking about for the landlord tenant.
Correct.
For classy yes. to represent.
Yep, yeah.
Okay.
So things happen. It's just this is a very incremental state.
This is a very incremental. Yes. I have to tell you that might be the title of this.
The title of this episode, the incremental state of Delaware.
very at a glacial pace.
Yes. But so I think when I was saying before, there's not the vision to see a different path. That's kind of what I mean, right? It's okay. This is where we are. How can we kind of pick away at the edges? And that's not going to solve the problem.
Yeah. Again, this is. I had a conversation with an unnamed elected official who was talking about, like, you know, making sure we got more money to Classy. And I said, I think that's fine. I'm glad that people are able to get representation, not lose their housing, and be treated fairly as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, you're treating the individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're taking these little individual cases and thinking, like, well, if we can help out a few people, then, hey, that's the best we can do. It's not.
I agree.
And of course, politicians are apt to pat themselves on the back over the smallest thing, and I'm apt to tell them they shouldn't. Like, that's the role. That's pretty much our roles. So when people try to impress me, I'm not easily impressed. I'll just put it that way. And so, yeah, I mean, we got to sort of somehow be able to pull that conversation out from, you know, just basically, oh, yeah, we can help as many people as we can help, and that's just the best we can do, and it's not. It's actually not the best we can do. It's actually not good enough, and this is why people are afraid that encampments are going to start springing up, because we're failing.
That's correct. Yes, I think that's a really good point. Wow. So not to sound surprised by that good point, but that was a really good point. That I think that's why people are afraid that encampments are going to, because they know you can see that we're failing to address the problem.
Right.
So the assumption is we're going to keep failing and it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that fear is actually true. If you internalize the fact that we're not doing anything, so all of this is going to get worse and that's why you're afraid, that's actually true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making sure that, you know, your local police department has more bulldozers and a way to use them is not actually what's going to solve
correct.
The problem.
That is correct. I do want to say, you just said no one's doing anything, and that's fine. I do want to say that lots of people are doing lots of things. It's just that that some people aren't doing things they should be doing, and those happen to be people with a lot of influence and resources and that could be leading the way to a different vision of what this could be.
Yes, and I think when I said that, just to be clear, obviously our whole conversation, we've mentioned a lot of different people in this work. A lot, and unfortunately,
I wanted to agree with you, but then I just wanted. Yeah. I didn't want to agree
it's
that everyone was
doing
anything.
No, it's a good point, and it's a fair point, and I should clarify it because obviously, yourself and Michael and Kim and all of these other people are doing it classy. Cheyenne Miller, Christian Willauer, I can name them. You know, the issue is that the real people who we have to convince that your time would be better spent building new systems to solve this problem than sort of working in an emergency room and triaging like the worst cases.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue.
That's correct. Yep.
So absolutely. those people will not, they will not allow us to succeed. And that's scary, but that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They're telling us that we have the police, you know, maybe we can get an unnamed developer here in the city to build some housing. You know, maybe we can give them some. We'll give them some money to build a building they'll make money off of, and they'll put, you know, some housing less than market rate. Wow, wow. Thanks, thanks, thanks.
You know what we should talk
thanks
about?
Thanks, unnamed brothers of the industry.
You know what we should talk about? Universal basic income.
You want to talk about it?
I mean, we could. I just think that would solve a whole lot of problems. One of the things that I think, and again, it's all housing is at the crux of so many issues, right? So it's housing related, but not just housing related. This money is not the most important thing in the world, right? But it would solve so many problems. Some of the things that people have to deal with day in and day out, poor people who are struggling to pay rent, people who are struggling to put gas in the car to get their kids to school, so they can keep their kids and keep their family together. I mean, so money solves some money can solve problems.
Well, here's my question.
And it's often a lot easier, a lot more administratively simple, and therefore even a lot cheaper to just give people money. Give people money.
Here's what I'll say. I agree. I mean, we talked about sort of some of the benefits that we got from the the COVID money that went out. Some of the benefits just to regular people. The child poverty plummeted, you know, almost by half. Maybe it was more. So that does work. Here's the catch that I ask people to be very careful about this, because there is a faction of UBI proponents that are sort of like libertarian sort of tech bros and stuff that are like, and what that would mean in that case usually is no more food assistance, no more Section 8 housing assistance, no more Social Security. We just give you this. It's actually cheaper because they're taking everything else away.
Right.
Yes, that's not
what I'm talking about.
Right. And I knew it wasn't. But I think it's important to mention that when you just say that this is one of the issues you got to dig in a little bit to figure out when you're speaking about it, about what it really means. Right. Because you can get people to buy into UBI that have very bad politics. And what they'll do with it is bad, you know. On top of, you know, just the child credit, just give parents money.
Mm-hmm,
who cares?
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. We have it.
And maybe like free child care. I don't know.
Free child care is good. Free medical. I mean,
And I know people talk about Europe all the time, and I know I have one of my best friends from college, married a German woman, moved to Germany, has kids in Germany, has been there ever since for the past like 10 years. And when they had their kids, between the two of them, they had like 4 years of someone being able to stay home with the kids. That's just incredible. Like their quality of life, they live in a small apartment, their quality of life was much better than.
Yeah. I mean, everyone sort of knows this, but they don't sort of want to reckon with it. Because it's like, there's a very American sort of ideal of somebody getting something they don't deserve.
Oh my gosh, we're so scared.
Afraid of that. It's the stupid. First of all, the reason things are called human rights is because everybody gets. Even if it's I think my worst enemy should have free health care because that's just the way it should work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we have a really weird sort of outlook on like.
We're very scared of somebody getting help that they don't deserve. Yeah, it's really, really upsetting. Yeah.
And I don't have to tell you that, but
you see it all the time in human services. Organizations that are specifically designed to help poor and homeless folks operate in that model and mindset. This person deserves to be here more than this person, so I'm going to let this person stay here and make this person leave.
Yeah, and again,
it's dealing with individual
people or making up an individual in your mind that actually doesn't exist. But in your mind, there's an individual out there who has these issues and made these choices and they should die in the street.
Yeah, it's a series of bad choices.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yep. But yeah, I mean, this is, I'm so glad you came in and talk about sort of some hot topics. That was cool because we really need to. We really need to reassess sort of how we're coming at this stuff. And I think, you know, now we're not getting I'm trying to convince people that really, if we really think about it, we're not really getting any good results here the way that we're doing this. And so it's time for sort of a reevaluation. And again, I think there's a way to bring these groups together in such a way that they feel empowered, that they feel like a call to act, to actually act. And I think, you know, rather than, you know, patting everybody on the back, we put the fear of God in everybody. This is what people deserve. They deserve housing. They deserve food. They deserve medical care. Like, that's just a fact. And that's what we're working off of. And if you like that idea, you come join with us. And, you know, and at that point, we build our own power structure. That's what he's doing. He's working on that all the time.
He
pretends.
That's awesome.
He pretends he's working on politics, but he's not. That's all a big facade. He's not really doing that. We're working behind the scenes on shit.
Good. So keep it up. That's what we need.
So we will definitely link to register for this event. What was the date again?
May 9th.
May yep. 9th.
All day we'll be in Dover helping you get an audience with your elected officials.
And look, if you're sort of like I am and you want an audience with your elected official and then you go in and tell them what's what, you can do that.
You can.
That's legal. That's part of the process.
That is part of the process.
You know, here's the thing. They don't like it. And you know what? That's tough.
Our elected officials work for us.
Yeah.
Not the other way around.
Yeah.
And I obviously think that everyone should be able to speak to their elected official about what's going on in their communities and not be scared to and not be fearful to and speak their mind.
And pro tip. It's a pro tip. Maybe you agree with it. Maybe you don't. Elected officials are very keen to tell you what you don't know. They're like, no, we know how this runs. We do it like this. Don't fall for that. Tell them you don't care about that. Say, I don't care about that. They'll tell you, oh, well, we got this and then the police and the developers and the union. And don't fall for that. Say, when they start doing that, just say, I don't care about any of that. Get the job done. I don't give a shit. I'm the constituent, not the developer or your process or the cops. That's a system. That's a systemic thing in the state. Tell them that you're a constituent, you're a resident of Delaware, and you don't care about their process. You want it done. And they, you know, eventually we'll figure out a way to do it, or, you know, Carl will organize and get them kicked out. That's how it works. Rachel, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I hope to see you on May 9th in Dover.
You might.
Okay.
You might.
Cool.
If my recovery process, now that I can't see, I might actually need that transportation help, so I might sign up for that.
You know who to contact. You know Sonia. You can reach out.
Yeah, cool, yeah, cool.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. Before we go, I just want to say one thing. There's something happening on college campuses that's very good and right, and we need to support that as much as we possibly can. Just as we've talked about before, the Democratic National Convention is in Chicago, of all places, and the whole world will be watching, and I hope that everybody's chanting Left is Best.